Welcome to the Hope on the Hard Road podcast, where you and your family can find community, find encouragement, and find hope for the road ahead. Speak encouraging words to one another. Build up hope so that you will all be together in this. 1 Thessalonians 5:11. Before we get started today, we want to let you know that we are coming up on our annual Moms Day Out retreat this May 17th through the 19th. Ladies, this year's retreat is going to be amazing. We're going to the Oaks here in San Diego, where we will enjoy luxury bunkhouse accommodations, yummy chef-created cuisine, an inspiring conference, and community connection with other moms who get it, along with lots of fun free time and rest, and activities including yoga under the stars, fireside chats, and much more. Register now on our website at hopeontheharroad.org or via the link on our social media. So hurry and grab your weekend retreat or Saturday tickets with a friend, and we'll see you there.
I'm so excited to have Steve Chapman here on the podcast today. Steve is the vice president at Rising Above Ministries, a nonprofit in Tennessee that is dedicated to lifting up the special needs community. As both a ministry leader and a dad with special needs children, Steve brings a wealth of insight and experience to share with us on the podcast today. This is the first part of a two-part series focused on dads. Let's get started. Welcome, Steve. It's really glad you're coming on the podcast today and speaking to us about dads.
Hey, Eric. Thank you. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited about this, for sure.
Yeah, so give us a little bit of background on you, your family, and you know your journey with special needs.
Yeah, absolutely. So my wife, Lori, and I, we just celebrated 25 years. So we've been married for 25 years. We are both redheads. So that's always interesting, but we make it work. So 25 years, we have five kids, 12, 18, 19, 21, and 28. Our oldest three are adopted. And of those three, two of those girls have Down syndrome. And then our oldest actually has had a lot of mental health, emotional challenges just from some early childhood trauma in her birth family. And then our two youngest, our 12 and 18, they're our neurotypical kiddos. And but unfortunately, they're the ones that actually inherited my wife and I's genes. So they've got that going against them, I think. So they're like a lethal combination of both of us. But yeah, and then we've got four grandkids, and we're figuring out, you know, the whole grandparenting. Yeah, so that's a little bit about my family. And of course, I'm currently on staff at the ministry called Rising Above Ministries here in Middle Tennessee. So it's a little bit of who I am and what my clan looks like.
Well, that's super. You know, as we talk about your daughters in particular, you shared that you all three of your oldest daughters are adopted. Mm-hmm. Did you know about them having special needs when you adopted them, or did that come out later? And maybe take us through that process of figuring out what their needs were.
Yeah, so I always tell people our story is unique. We became special needs parents a little bit differently. So we knew both of our daughters with Down syndrome. We knew that they had that diagnosis. One of them was 5 days old, and actually, it was a teenage mom, and she had put the child up for adoption, had a couple that were going to adopt her. Nobody knew that she had Downs until she was born. Mm-hmm. And the young couple was just, you know, they were just shocked and stunned, and they backed out of the adoption. So we had a mutual friend that reached out to us and said, hey, have you guys talked about special needs? We didn't even know what that meant, honestly. When she asked that question, I was like, what does that even mean? Mm-hmm. And then she said, well, this little girl has Down syndrome. Well, I immediately knew. I knew several folks that, you know, had a family member, a brother. So we talked about it and said, yeah, we'll do this. So we adopted our first daughter with Downs. And then a little over a year later, we found out about our second daughter who had been born. And, you know, we look back on that and we were just crazy enough to think, oh, well, you know, we've got a year under our belt, you know, yeah, we're old pros now. So we adopted our second daughter. And of course, during this same time, our third daughter, who's actually older than both of them, came to us via our state department, our state children's department here. She was in custody and had been removed from her birth home, and they end up wanting to place her with us. And, you know, I tell people that story. I mean, literally, we were talking to the agency. Okay, so we have one. We've adopted one daughter with Downs, had her for a year. She's a year old now. We find out about a second little child who's at this time is about 6 months old. And literally the caseworker from the agency is in our home interviewing us, and we have agreed to adopt this second child with Down syndrome. And we've signed the paperwork. She leaves our house. I go to check the messages, and it's a caseworker from the state telling us about this other child that they think we're a good match for. And I always tell people, it's at this point in this story that most sane people would have said, hey, we can't do this. We just agreed to adopt our second. But we literally prayed and we adopted. So we adopted two pretty close together. So within 20 months, we went from having no children to having three daughters, two with Down syndrome and one that we would learn had a lot of serious emotional and some mental health challenges just from early childhood trauma. But we were just crazy like that. And so so that's how we started our family. We'd been married probably about 5 years, hadn't been able to get pregnant. And so we began the adoption process. So we don't have that that shock and that trauma that a lot of special needs parents have of when you're planning for just a typical normal child and then your child is born, or, you know, maybe you find out during pregnancy that there's serious complications, or like a lot of times with autism, sometimes it's a couple of years in and you start noticing some things aren't right. So we didn't have that story. We knew going into it that we're taking on these children with special needs. And so, you know, we didn't, I used to say we knew what we were doing. We, looking back, we had no idea what we were doing, but, you know, we did know we were stepping into this special needs life and it was going to be different, you know? Mm-hmm. So we had that knowledge. So we didn't have that shock and have to deal with that grief and walk through that, you know, dreams that are not going to come true now, you know, that kind of thing that I know a lot of special needs parents and dads especially have to deal with. We didn't have that. So, you know, we knew going in, and that's how our family started. Right. And, you know, and so like our two youngest who are neurotypical, that are biological, you know, I mean, that's all they've ever known. Hey, we've got these older sisters that have special needs. And so that's just been our life.
Wow. I mean, it's incredible, incredible. You guys just, you know, what I love is that you guys prayed about it and you felt the Lord putting it on your heart to do this. And so you always have that foundation that you don't need to question, you know, did we do the right thing? You know you did the right thing. You know that you followed, and obedience is always the right thing. But you talk about going from no kids, now all of a sudden you have three kids. I mean, and some shock to it. Can you maybe talk about those early years that you, all of a sudden now you have three kids, you're looking at each other, you and your wife, like, how are we going to do this? And what came from there?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely changed. I always tell people, your first child changes your life, you know, because it's no longer just you and your spouse. Now you have a child. And then when you have a second one, even with one, you're still pretty flexible. You get two and suddenly it's, you know, going anywhere is, you know, you got to really think about, you know, do we have everything we need? We've got, you know, we got wipes, we got diapers, we got all this stuff. Well, then you put special needs on top of that, and you have to start thinking about a lot of things. Like, it's, you know, just that whole impromptu stuff kind of, you know, went away because you really have to think about what you're doing. You know, we were very blessed. I mean, our families, both of our parents, you know, just embraced the choice that we made to adopt special needs kids. I'm sure they thought we were crazy that we took on so much at one time. You know, we didn't spread it out a little bit more, but they were very supportive, and that was very important. But yeah, I mean, so we just kind of threw ourselves into it. We knew nothing. We knew nothing about therapies and early childhood interventions and all those kind of things that we would later learn. There was no manual that was given to us. Like, oh, you know, this is like, you've adopted a child with Down syndrome. Here's what you need to do. Mm-hmm. There was nothing like that. You know, we're just figuring it out. Now, fortunately, there's a lot of resources out there. And we met some people who, you know, had children with special needs, and they were just a wealth of information, you know, to say, hey, you should check with this organization. So, because, you know, we wanted to give them the best head start we could. I mean, we know there are going to be delays. There's going to be so, but we wanted to make sure we gave them the best opportunities that were there. But, you know, and even kids with Down syndrome, there's no two alike, you know. Mm-hmm. Our girls are so different strengths. And we figured, you know, we learned that along the way. But so it's just, you know, so that's been our story. And we're still learning, you know. Oh, yeah. I mean, we're still learning, still figuring it out. And every season is a new phase. They get older, and, you know, and then you got to figure out what's that going to look like. And we're still doing that. And, you know, and I'm sure we'll be for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, no, yeah. Definitely. I just love the, you know, some of the things you're just sharing. One of the things is, you know, you mentioned about having kids is when you're first married, you realize you're pretty selfish as a person. But when you have a kid in the picture and then you combine it with two kids, you realize, wait a minute, they're crying. They have needs that have to be met by me. So yeah. Now you step into that.
And, you know, they never ask if it's a convenient time. No. You know, is it okay if I cry right now? It's like, well, could you wait till after the game is over? Or maybe let's get through dinner and then you decide to have a major blowout. You know, it's like, no, they never ask if it's a convenient time. And,
no, yeah. It's constantly laying it down. Mm. It's crazy, but it's also humorous too. And I love the laughing about it, because you kind of have to have a sense of humor in life, because it just gets thrown at you a lot of times. So, yes. Yeah, for sure. I get that. One of the things, I know you've been involved in ministry, you know, for a number of years, and probably along the way, you know, having kids with special needs, you that's been on your heart as well. But can you talk about maybe like how you were in ministry and what made you transition full time into, you know, special needs ministry with Rising Above?
Yeah. Yeah. So, this year marks actually 30 years that I've been in ministry. That was never my goal or ambition growing up. I actually always thought I'd be an attorney, either an attorney or a DJ. That's like, they're not even remotely similar, I know. But yeah, God just called me. I felt early, probably my senior year in college, I really felt a call on my life that it was not law school. And I just began kind of trying to figure that out, what it looked like to walk with God. And so 30 years of camp, being a camp pastor for kids. I've been a youth pastor, student ministry, children's pastor. Spent the last 20 years in a local church as the family pastor, working with families, married couples, and just overseeing a myriad of ministries there. Along the way, obviously, we became a special needs family, and recognized the suddenly your eyes are open to, oh, there's this enormous community of special needs families that we probably never even noticed, you know. And so we heard about this thing called Rising Above, and they were having this monthly worship service, sensory friendly worship service. Mm. And I remember I took one of my daughters. I said, let me just go check this out. I'll kind of scout this thing out. You know, I told my wife, so let's not take the whole family. I'll take one of the girls. And we went, and Rising Above was doing this thing. And it was so unique. It was so sweet. It was so incredible to seeing all these families with individuals from little kids to adult children with special needs, all kinds of disabilities and special needs, and coming together in what a sensory friendly worship service looked like and just what they were doing. And as we learned more about this, we got involved with Rising Above, participating in their events and programs as that ministry was growing. Mm-hmm. And then the couple that started Rising Above, Jeff and Becky Davidson, Jeff and I, actually, he ended up coming on staff at our church. Mm-hmm. And so we served on staff together, and he and I started a special needs ministry in our church. And So we worked together a lot like that. And of course, Jeff passed away about 5 years ago. And we've always been just, you know, a big part of Rising Above. They would ask me a lot to kind of, you know, be a speaker for the dad's events or stuff like that, just things that Jeff probably would have done. And so got to be involved in that. And about a year ago, I'd been 20 years at our church and just felt like, okay, God, am I riding this bus another 20 years or is it time to do something different? I still feel like I have a little gas left in my tank at 53. And so I started praying about that. Had no idea Rising Above at the same time was their board, and Becky was praying about, hey, we think it's time maybe to bring on a guy to kind of head up some of the family ministry and men's ministry stuff. And so they came and said, hey, would you ever think about, you know, you're at the church, you know, would you ever think about this? And I was like, wow, well, you know, as a matter of fact, I'm actually in a season of praying about what the next season looks like. And so from talking, my wife and I in prayer, we just felt like this is what God's doing. It was time to get off that bus and get over here on this bus. It's a life that we live. So, you know, we're not here because we're experts. We're here. I tell people we're here because we're practitioners. We're living this life. we are learning things along the way. But we love this, you know. And so it was just a beautiful God thing, you know, that the timing was great and right. And so I've actually just completed my first year being full time with Rising Above. So it's been I'm very blessed. There's no question about it, to be able to get to do what I'm doing now. You know, so
that's fantastic. You just watching your heart ready for something change and being launched into something, God's putting that on your heart, and then watching that ministry, the ministry of Rising Above, have a need that you're a perfect fit for. Plus, you knew her husband, so you can kind of step into, you know, the image of what he created, being there and carry it on and build from that, probably with a lot of the vision that he had knowing him. And so with that, you know, talk to us about one of the things in looking at Rising Above, all the things that you guys do with dads, you know, and supporting and bringing them into the community is just fantastic. Share some of the things that you do and kind of how you built that up and where you see that going.
Yeah, well, you know, for me, obviously, I'm building upon a foundation, a very solid foundation that was laid even after Jeff passed away. His wife Becky stepped up and just done a phenomenal job leading this ministry. Different dads and guys stepped in. You know, at Jeff's funeral at the graveside, I shared, and I remember looking out and seeing all these special needs dads that he had poured into, and I just challenged them. I said, guys, I said, you know, our leader, you know, has been called home, but we've got to step up, you know, and continue this mission. You know, having no idea that 5 years later, you know, here I'd be stepping into this role. But so, you know, a lot of the things that we do for dads, really three main areas. One is we do a weekly online community group. You know, the whole online thing, really, I guess a lot of that birthed out of COVID. We kind of had to do some things online. And so, but what we discovered was that there are dads all over the country. You know, we have local programming. We have a monthly dads hang time, and it's mostly local dads. It's in person. We get together. We have a meal. We just hang out. We talk. It's a great way to connect. But we found that there's dads all over the country that sometimes are in locations where there's not any type of special needs ministry, and there's not, maybe the churches just don't have a clear vision for this. And so they're pretty isolated. So we have several guys that hop on our weekly community online group from around the country, and connect that way. And then, like I say, we have our monthly dads hang time here in locally in Tennessee. And, you know, we'll have, you know, dads come together for that once a month. And then we do an annual retreat we call Base Camp. And we do that in October. And it's just, it's a weekend where dads, again, from all over the country come. We bring some guys in and usually have some teaching times, good food, campfire, hangout, skeet shooting, just that kind of stuff. A lot of free time just to relax, chill, connect. But just trying to create a space. And in all these venues, whether it's the weekly online group, the monthly gathering, the annual camp, it's to create a space. I always say, try to create spaces and places for dads to voice, vent, and vomit. You know, it's like the dads, we carry a lot of this, and we usually don't express, we're usually not nearly as expressive as our wives are. Mm-hmm. And honestly, we probably don't need to be venting that to our wives. We need that safe place. And I think other special needs dads is a great place for that, where we can just voice our life, voice what it looks like, mm-hmm. with guys who understand. You know, yes. A lot of times your coworkers or your colleagues, they don't get it. And so sometimes what you're trying to explain, they're just like, I have no idea what you're talking about. But also to vent, because sometimes it's just frustrating. And then sometimes you got to vomit. Sometimes it's just bad, and you just need to unload that poison, that pain, that hurt, that frustration. I've had dads just, and I tell them, you know, you can almost see they're saying things and they're expressing how they feel. And it's almost like, oh man, this really sounds terrible, doesn't it? And I'm like, dude, I get it. You know, it's real. It's real. And you need a safe place to be able to say those things, you know, because, you know, so we try to, you know, provide that, create that kind of space. And two, a lot of it is just giving dads, like, especially with our hang time and our annual retreat, giving dads a chance to do just some normal guy stuff. Because if you think about it, as special needs dads, a lot of times our lives are about modifications or eliminations. Like, we can't do that. You know, we don't go to the games, or we don't get to go here or do that because we just can't. Mm-hmm. So we give all that up. But we ourselves are not disabled and have special needs.
Right.
And so sometimes it's just giving these dads a chance to do some normal guy stuff that they don't typically get to in their world anymore. And so just a chance to hang out and, you know, do axe throwing or go play golf or, you know, whatever, just those kind of things. And so try to provide dads that kind of space is what we're trying to do with a lot of these, whether it's weekly, monthly, or annually.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I've in my experience working with these dads too, you know, life's beat you up a little bit. And so when you get together, the transparency that can happen and the trust in the group, knowing that, you know, the guy next to you is going through some tough stuff, and, you know, so not being afraid to, as you called it, vomit on what's really going on and share and get that off your chest, and then, you know, rally around each other to keep carrying on. So love that.
And it's you want to do that in a play. You don't want to do that at home. You don't want to do that with your spouse. One guy described it one time. It's like you need lightning rods in your life, because all that electricity is building up, that pain, that hurt, that frustration. And if you don't, you need a lightning rod. You need somebody that's safe where you can just unload all that energy and frustration. And it's not gonna electrocute them. They're just gonna take all that stuff, ground it, and say, okay, good, you got that off your chest. Now where do we go? But if you do that with your wife or your kid, you know, you're gonna electrocute them. You know, you're just gonna unload, and it's gonna hurt them. And so it's good to have that space where, hey, it's okay here. Let it all out. Let's get it out. Let's be real. Let's be honest. And then we can, you know, we can move on. So yeah, it's. But I was like, yeah, don't do that. Don't do that at home. Have that place where you feel safe and can get that stuff out.
Yeah,
you know, for sure.
That's great stuff.
Thank you for joining us for part one of our discussion with Steve Chapman. Join us back here next time as we continue our discussion on supporting dads.
Resources and contact information for today's podcast will be included in the show notes. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share us with others and be sure to follow us so you won't miss an episode. And we'd love to hear from you, so please leave us a comment or rating and connect with us on social media or on our website at hopeonthehardroad.org.